Boats free. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
So while RJ fetches his boat, I'm going to say hi and welcome to episode 294 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Ray Harrison. And Formula 1 is back, everybody!
Yeah, race is back, baby!
Yay! We're back! King, show
we
some
have purpose
enthusiasm.
Again, baby! Yeah! Yeah, yeah, yeah!
And it was actually a really, really good race!
Seasonal affective disorder is crushing me from the inside, baby! Let's go!
It's like we used up one of our free quota for the year early. Sweet! We had a really, really good Formula One race in Bahrain this weekend, and we're going to talk about it intensely over the next hour or so, as well as, well, the carnage of the real main event of the weekend, because Formula 2 is back as well!
Yes!
What do you mean the real main event? We had Dirtstall in NASCAR,
and it
was a goddamn mess.
If it wasn't for the fact we were recording, I would disconnect you from this Discord server right now, Buckley. How dare you? Again, it was an absolutely ridiculous weekend of motorsport this time around. And we're not even going to talk about MotoGP on this episode. We're going to be doing both MotoGP races on next week's show. So if you've been tuning in waiting for that, I will say, very politely, please come back next week. Thanks. Don't get me wrong, it was still a pretty good MotoGP race, but amazingly, Formula One might have stolen the weekend, which is something I never normally say on this show.
Yeah, but, this is a truly rare occurrence.
Very much so. Thanks, Maverick, you ruined it for everyone! In the meantime, our very excitable set of co-hosts, besides King... Ryan King, hello, sir.
Yes, hello. I am glad that Formula One has returned, bringing home my favorite child to Formula Two.
His favorite child. King, you have about 15 favorite children. You're going to have to narrow it down for the viewers at home. You know that, right?
Wait, it's pretty clear. For anyone who's ever watched any episode of this show knows that it's Formula 2 and everything else.
To be fair, I can't really argue with him on that one. That's completely valid. RJ, hello, sir.
Hey, y'all. Good weekend of racing. Glad to be back. Glad to have purpose again in our lives. It's all coming back together. Mainstream racing season, it's back. And at least for the moment, it doesn't feel like it's a drag.
Give it a week.
Hey, we got a whole month-ish without Formula One. I think we're good.
Well, 3 weeks. We got Imola in 3 weeks, and then it's like another 3 weeks, and then we got Portimao, and then it all becomes Formula One all the time, constantly. All the way through spring and summer. You'll love it. We don't love it. It's a fucking chaotic calendar. There's 9 races in 11 weeks after the summer break, but who's counting? Anyway, and with us as always, Cam Buckley. Hello, sir.
Hi, everyone. It's really hard not to look smug right now.
See, in the background, right, one Cam Buckley has been incredibly smug and has not reminded us every time I've had that open call that he predicted that Red Bull will be right up there with Mercedes at the start of this season. He's not mentioned
it at all. I got talked down relentlessly during the season preview. It is my time to shine, boy.
See, I was going to be smug because I told you that Fernando Alonso was not going to have a triumphant return to Formula One.
Wasn't going to be particularly triumphant. I didn't know it would be this untriumphant.
Defeated by a sandwich bag. You got defeated by the discarded remnants of a Tesco meal deal for $3 that you bought for a minute.
To borrow a quote from friend of the show, Hazel Southwell, that is a great advertisement, as far as I'm concerned, for the eradication of single-use plastics. anyway.
Hey, it's just changing the plastic sandwich bag to a paper sandwich bag.
I say we don't know what the material for the sandwich bag was. All we know is that it was something. Oh. That covered a sandwich once.
Yeah, if you've ever seen a NASCAR race, you know those hot dog wrappers can still be an issue.
It's funny you say that, because I have a friend of mine that works for Alpine, or is on the way out of Alpine, and Yeah, I got a source! And she told me...
No, on the way out! You're just dropping people's employment status on the podcast.
I know, it's great. Like their loss will be Williams' gain. Point is that apparently, according to her, it actually is a lot more like the hot dog wrappers that King was referring to a second ago. So you might be closer to the truth than you realize on that one, King, you know?
So it's a sandwich wrapper is what we're saying.
More like a burger wrapper, but yeah, you know, that sort of, you know, like the aluminium foil, that sort of thing, apparently.
Look, we just covered the fact that it was more like a hot dog wrapper, therefore it is a sandwich wrapper. Now that I'm throwing the whole
no,
into
no,
this
no,
review,
no, no, not again. Not again, no.
Oh my god.
While RJ strolls out of the room to write a third chapter in his book of Is a Hot Dog a Sandwich, I think it's best we get the general housekeeping out of the way. Places you can find us real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101 if you're watching us on there already. Hi, subscribe, hit the bell. We promise RJ we'll be back in a minute. Maybe. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. Our personal handles are on the screen right now if you're watching this on YouTube. If you're not, they're at Harrison101HD. They're at RJ Grabs a Bottle of Water. They're at Ryan Eric King and at CBuckley917. It's actually RJ O'Connell, but you know, RJ, have you finished?
I'm good. I got my water.
You sure? You're not going to have a hissy fit over the hot dog and a sandwich? No? No?
I'm good. I just wanted to throw everything in disrepute for a hot second.
Oh, you never do that on this show.
You and the rest of Andrea Moda F1.
Just renegades, all of them. We're on Instagram at Motorsport101Pod. You can follow us on there. And I have a good hunch there'll be a spicy outtake or two from this episode on there very soon, because King sprung a surprise on us because he didn't tell us when he was actually starting to record. Way to go, King.
Hey, when you told everyone to mute themselves, I was like, okay, I'm going to start recording now. I didn't know things were going to fly off the handle.
Apparently the discourse on Twitter is all the rages is that, you know, people YouTubers they would like to see on a cookery show, and apparently my name's come up an awful lot in this, and I have no idea why. Which is a spoiler alert, because folks, I can't cook for shit. Like, my cookery goes to bolognese, a stir fry, and that's about it. Anything else involves Chef Mike.
Or that's, shit, that's really all you need, though. A good spag bowl, as the kids like to call it.
Right. A good spag bowl, a good stir fry, and Chef Mike, aka the microwave. but that's about as far as it goes.
Gordon Ramsay wants to know your location.
I'm glad one of us in here got the reference. Well done, Cam. Very good. We're also on patreon.com/motorsport101. Father's gets you early access to all of our audio shows. You get upgraded to the $10 version for all the video episodes as well. And you get access to the supporters club of our Discord server, where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. Shout out to Zale, to Fiddly, to Jason, to Vic and Zoe for listening in. Much appreciated, guys, as ever. Oh, now that one of the most chaotic intros we've had in some time on this show out of the way, let's get into the 2021 Formula One season opener, the Bahrain Grand Prix.
It's debatable whether the 2021 Bahrain Grand Prix is the greatest opening round to a Formula One season of all time, but at the very least, it's in the discussion for being one of the greatest opening rounds in recent memory. As a fascinating tactical and on-track battle unfolded between Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes and Max Verstappen and Red Bull Honda. Once the race properly got underway after both Haas cars brought out safety cars and virtual safety cars, the race was on between pole sitter Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton, who qualified in second. Mercedes undercut Red Bull at each of the two pit stops that they made for their lead drivers. Red Bull were willing to concede Verstappen's track position behind Hamilton in exchange for having a fresher set of tires in the final leg of the race. With 6 laps to go, Verstappen was within striking range of Hamilton, inching closer with every sector and every lap. And with 4 laps to go, Verstappen finally got the move done and overtook Hamilton for first place, only to give it back, with Verstappen going out of bounds to make that move last out of turn 4. And instead of taking the place back in the remaining laps, Verstappen fell away just enough, giving Hamilton the window to claim his 96th career victory by just 3/4 of a second. But was Lewis Hamilton in the wrong for extending the track at turn 4 multiple times throughout the race well before Verstappen made an illegal pass outside the white lines? FIA race direction intended to let drivers extend the exit of turn 4, quote, if not done deliberately, during the race after clamping down during practice and qualifying. Yet when Red Bull told Max to do the same over the radio for the world to hear, Mercedes were told to tell their leading man not to keep doing it or risk a black and white flag. This even as race director Michael Massey stated after the race that nothing had changed in how he would enforce track limits at that spot of the track. Elsewhere, Valtteri Bottas, even with a slow pit stop, completed the podium for Mercedes in third and got the fastest lap point. Lando Norris brought home a fourth-place finish from McLaren, while teammate Daniel Ricciardo dragged a damaged McLaren to seventh. And in the drive of the day, Sergio Perez went from breaking down on the formation lap and starting for the pit lane up into fifth place on his debut for Red Bull. So, Dre, King, Cam, thoughts, feelings, reactions, takes about that fight between Hamilton and Verstappen.
I'm glad we're starting with that because I didn't want to be every other media outlet out there and start with the track limit debate heard around the world. This was a fantastic Grand Prix.
God damn, that was right. God damn, that was good.
That was
I tried to tell you, Red Bull is real.
I hate to admit it, for the first time in about 50 appearances since we've had Cam on here full time, Cam was right. God!
How dare you?
I'm still holding back. I'll wait till Spain before I make a judgment about whether Red Bull are really that close or not.
Well, I mean, let's weigh this up for a second. Verstappen led every single practice session. He out-qualified Hamilton by 0.4 of a second with a slightly damaged floor in that Q3 final session as well. The amount of times in the last 7 years and change of the V6 hybrid era, I can't remember the amount of times, more than maybe a single hand count, as to the amount of times Mercs were this much on the back foot relative to another car. Lewis Hamilton is the best qualifier in the field by miles. Like, when was the last time he was out-qualified without, like, major shenanigans by 0.4? 0.4! Like, that's emphatic. Like,
Yeah, and, I mean, previously we've always seen that Mercedes has some kind of X factor with their car where maybe they don't have outright lap time, but they have straight-line speed, they have extra cornering ability, they can turn the car up for qualifying, or they have superior race pace. And in this situation, on the car side, Red Bull are dead even with them or faster. Definitively. Which is the first time I really think we can say since first half of 2018.
Certainly. Something in that ballpark. And even then, Ferrari weren't beating them like this, like by 0.4... out of the box. Like, that's...
No, it took some time for them to unlock that car, and
yeah.
To that effect with Red Bull, we haven't seen Red Bull do anything like this since the end of the V8 era.
No, it's been a while.
Welcome back, Red Bull.
A long time.
It's 2013 all over again. Where's my boy at? We'll get to him.
More on him later, and oh, God. Yeah, as it has played out, these regulations that cut the sides of the floor, that have created heavier, stiffer tires, have hurt the lower rate cars more relatively than the higher rate cars. And of course, Mercedes are pretty much the progenitors of the low rate concept.
Oh, yeah. I know America's number one team principal in Formula One, Otmar Szafnauer of Aston Martin, was big mad about this.
Big mad.
This is his laptop. He's going to show everybody how much his car's been hurt by these new regulations. Look, we're like 3 seconds slower.
Yeah, more on Aston later, but what it's created is a Mercedes that is not stable, that is not easy to extract the maximum from, and their bandage solution for this weekend was to more or less just stick the biggest rear wing they could find on the car and then deal with the understeer at high-speed turns.
Yeah.
That's one hell of an X-factor for the 2021 car, I gotta say.
Yeah. Big wing. It sounds like something you get in a Mario game. yeah, like Hamilton said after qualifying, he gave it everything he had on that final qualifying lap. There was nothing more to give, and he got blasted by Verstappen in qualifying. And everyone was just like, oh, it's real. Like, we all turned into Kurt Angle. It's damn real. It's like, oh, no. Whatever will happen.
Then, of course, they do not award the points on the Saturday. They award them on the Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And for as quick as Verstappen and his fancy new Red Bull is, Red Bull got caught kind of napping on strategy. He did have differential issues early in the race, inducing some understeer. I don't know how bad they got, because he seemed to be able to cope after a few laps. But what it meant is he couldn't really pull away from Hamilton. Mm. And it gave Mercedes the opportunity to undercut him and take track position. And you never, ever, ever, Ferrari taught us this 20 fucking times, when they did have an advantage, you never give Mercedes track position.
Never. Not in a million years. They will punish you for it. And that was the key moment of the race, the end of the first stint, where Verstappen had about a 2 second lead in his back pocket. Merckx pulled the undercut. There was a window for Red Bull to respond to the undercut the first lap in. Now, we'd already seen a teaser of this, because Fernando Alonso, further back in the midfield, was the first guy to come in who was running the soft compound tyre from qualifying, because he'd made Q3. The undercut was worth a good 2 to 3 seconds, I reckon. And if Amazon's data was to be believed, and I remember this vividly in my head as the race was going on, they gave Red Bull about a 40% chance to get out in front on the first lap after Hamilton came in. Now, I spoke about this on the Discord with a couple of guys afterwards. I said, look, if the data reckons 40%, and you've got the best pit crew in the sport in your box ready
the
to
best.
Go, guys.
Period,
the guys
point
who,
blank, the best.
Yeah, the guys who went, you know, sub 2 seconds, I think, nearly a dozen times last year in only a 17-race season, they broke their own world record for the fastest pit stop last season. They can go under 2 seconds. I think they're one of the, if not the only team that can consistently do that. 40% chance plus the good chance of a positive pit stop. I take my chances and push the button and go for the and come in immediately to cover the undercut. I don't know how you guys felt about
strategy,
it.
Their whole strategy was a little bit weird in that they hadn't. It was simultaneously too aggressive and not aggressive enough.
It was weird. It was weird in like that way where you think maybe they could pull this off. Maybe they're not like missing something by going with an extreme overcut as Hamilton's attempting to undercut them aggressively. And it was fascinating. And I thought, especially in that last stint of the race with Verstappen on much fresher tires, he was closing in on them with a rate of like, I really thought he was going to have it.
Yeah, because...
And sure enough, with 4 laps to go, at least at first, I'm thinking they got it.
Yeah, because that's what Verstappen wanted to do during that, before the last stop. He said, don't pit me unless you have to. And after that radio message, they stayed out a couple more laps.
Yeah.
It was just a little bit strange where they had enough confidence in their car and in Max on fresher tires to chase Mercedes down, but they didn't have enough confidence in him to potentially to try and cover off the undercut in the first place, and if not, slot right back in behind Hamilton and then pressure him and attempt to re-undercut him later.
Yeah, it was very strange. It was like, we think Verstappen can gun Hamilton down on track, but not enough to the point where we would consider responding to an undercut. It's very strange logic. And yeah, he came out of that because the thing is, we saw it. Like I said to people after the race, the race was not lost from Verstappen's overtake, which we'll get to in a minute. It was lost on the first stint pit stop and not covering the undercut. They went long. The undercut worked out beautifully for Mercedes. It was worth about 3 or 4 seconds. And then Hamilton comes out in front. And the last thing you ever want to do is give Lewis Hamilton track position. He's incredibly hard to beat at the front. He's the best front runner this sport's ever seen. That's the last thing you ever want to do. And yeah, we saw Red Bull able to be more aggressive because they had the more aggressive strategy. Because they were able to run softer compounds of tyre in the end of the race. But it didn't matter because they weren't quite close enough till the end. And then, well, I guess we can avoid this no longer. The overtake heard around the world. Verstappen coming through on Hamilton with about 5 laps to go. But then turn 4, he puts all 4 wheels off the track. Now, I don't think I need to explain too hard that this has been a hard and fast rule for a good few years now. You are not allowed to overtake anybody with 4 wheels off the track. You have to concede the position or risk a time penalty.
That's a given.
Yeah, often or not, you'll be warned. You'll be given an opportunity to give the place back before a penalty will come into play. If you remove the advantage, yeah, which he was given a chance. And to be fair to Max and Red Bull, they immediately suspected that. They were told by race control, apparently. He's going to have to give that one back.
Yeah, I'm surprised he did that where he did as soon as he did. I kind of feel like maybe if he did that later on down the track, that maybe Max, he wouldn't have been as much a bad spot.
This is weird for Max Verstappen, for his reputation, but he decided that it wouldn't have been fair enough to make Lewis wait to re-overtake him, which I'm thinking, like, wait, is this the same Max Verstappen we've seen be arguably the most ruthless driver in all of Formula One since he walked into the sport?
my man pushed out Charles Leclerc to win a race in Austria once.
Yeah, slammed him off the track with his car. It shows me a Verstappen that I think is considering the long game a little more this year. For good reason.
He might have something to play with for the first time in his career.
Exactly. And the reason why this overtake was controversial in the first place, because I don't think it was a legitimate overtake. He put all 4 wheels off the track. That should never be a legitimate overtake.
Yeah.
The reason why this was controversial in the first place is because we had 4 separate rulings across the space of 1 weekend for a single piece of tarmac. The exit of turn 4.
Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, J.J. Dillon, and Tony Blanchard.
Now,
look, in practice and in qualifying, you were not allowed to run all 4 wheels off the track.
Mm-hmm.
If you did that, your time was deleted. Zero tolerance.
Fair enough.
In the race, race direction told the drivers, you may run wide at the exit of turn 4 if not done deliberately. Big air.
Yeah, because sometimes just shit happens sometimes at De La Rosa Corner.
Oh,
which is, I'm sad that they are not naming it De La Rosa Corner, by the way.
And then, midway through the race, after Lewis Hamilton had track extended 29 times,
doing it for Kevin Harvick, obviously.
Oh, doing it for Kevin Harvick. That is a weird line.
The age of F1 TV, where anyone could just go back and watch the onboard footage from any car at any moment in time.
And that's how people found out on Twitter a couple of hours after the race had finished, because they'd been able to go on F1 TV, watch the entire race from Hamilton's onboard camera, and you could see the first 29 laps of 30... off the track at turn 4 again and again and again. Carry on, Cam.
Yes. Now, everyone was, for the most part, was doing this to greater or lesser degrees. Lewis was the most aggressive with it, and fair play to him. If you keep doing it and no one says anything, you're a racing driver. You're going to take every liberty that is handed to you.
If you're playing a basketball game and they're not calling elbows to the face, you could just elbow people. Keep throwing elbows to the face.
You're going to keep doing it. And the inflection point for the track limits controversy came with a radio call to Max Verstappen, who was trying to protect from Lewis. I believe he was ahead, still yet to make his final pit stop. Mm-hmm. Red Bull told Max, run farther out of turn four. Lewis is doing it. He's not getting penalized. And immediately the FIA stepped in and told everyone, primarily Mercedes, to stop running wide at that corner.
Now and, yeah. It's getting a bit silly.
Yeah, and give me just a second. I'm going to dig up the exact conversation because I had it downloaded here. Bonington had actually had a chat.
Your connection might go for a couple seconds.
Okay, I'll start from the top on that one. I was going to say is that, yeah, I've actually got the actual conversation that Bono, as we affectionately call him, Lewis Hamilton's race engineer Peter Bonington had with Hamilton just a couple of laps later, where Bonington goes, quote, Lewis, we're getting warnings about track limits at turn four, so just tidy that up. Hamilton, understood. I thought there was no track limits. Bonington, yeah, copy on the track limits, Lewis, but we are getting the messages from race control, so you will get a black and white flag next time, the warning flag, if you guys don't know already, then 5 seconds. So Hamilton again says on the radio, okay, can you be clear what the rule is? Bonington, affirm, let's do it as we were doing in qualifying. Hamilton, I've been doing the same thing all race. It's bullshit. Bonington, yeah, they're just getting a bit bumpy about it now. That was the exact conversation that Peter Bonington had with Lewis on the radio as this was all happening, basically. And after the race, we got an interview with Michael Massey, who said the rules didn't change throughout the race, which says to me that one of the two are lying, and I don't think it's Mercedes.
No, look. You can't have a driver run wide 29 times.
29?
And claim that... And say that you were monitoring the corner the whole time, that you had people monitoring it, and then change tune halfway through the race. I love the way you put it, Dre, that it's closing the gate after the horse had bolted.
That's exactly how I described it in my video review, which you can see on the YouTube channel if you want my personal thoughts on it, but I'm going to echo what I said there in the sense of... My theory was always that I think the FIA and the stewards were a bit embarrassed by Red Bull's radio message that they said to Max. And I don't blame Red Bull for seeing what had happened with Hamilton doing what he was turn four and saying,
if you're Red Bull,
might as well do the same thing.
Yeah, if you're Red Bull talking to Max, you're basically telling Max for the whole world to hear, yeah, go cheat. They're not enforcing track limits.
Oh, my God. And yeah, and I understand why the FIA had enforced the rules like they did. They don't want to be seen as overtly stringent and, you know, constantly penalizing people. But there's a balance between just letting everything go and just straight up.
Here's the thing, King. What is the track? What is the track? What is not the track?
That's a great question. We'll be here for the next 5 hours discussing what is a track and not a track.
Look, it is either the track and it's available to run and overtake on, or it is not part of the track and you shouldn't be going out there every single lap.
Yeah. And
none of this in between wishy-washy bullshit that has been so common since Massey took over as the head race director, we got 4 different rulings of what is and what is not the track, because clearly if you're letting someone run out there egregiously 29 times, then they're allowed to use that as part of the track.
Yeah. Is a hot dog part of the track?
Silence, yeah, Brand.
This seems to be kind of, you know, Michael Massey's culture, if you will, coming from Australian supercars where it's boys have at it. And
You can't say it's boys have at it and then say, boys, actually, no. You're going to have to calm it down about halfway through the race.
Don't embarrass me. Yeah, please don't embarrass me. Otherwise, don't have at it.
No, I would say it's less embarrassment, more just straight-up complaints from other teams. Just straight-up, hey, this other dude's breaking this clear rule. Why aren't you enforcing it? Can you please stop extending turn four now, please?
We've had enough, you know? You're making me look stupid. No, look, I try not to be critical of the race directors. One, for the reason of we were spoilt with Charlie Whiting, God rest his soul. We just didn't get moments like this very often with Charlie because he knew where the line was.
What do you mean we didn't get moments like this? Does no one remember like Belgium and like Belgium in 2008?
It wasn't like this frequently, King. I think you'll have to admit that at least. I'm not saying he was perfect, but we've had multiple discussions about Michael Massey as race director in the two or plus years now he's been in this job. We had the black and white flag with Leclerc at Monza. We had them trying to decide a race with what I call the Verstappen Amendment at Austria a couple of years ago. We had Turkey last year and running a session where there was still a machine on track. These moments are adding up. It's not a great look for the stewards involved.
And it's not just that. It's that Massey, afterwards in the media, is trying to cover his track saying, well, there was no change in how we were monitoring the corner. It's like,
We heard
a radio message. Yeah, we have multiple radio messages to the contrary. We have the receipts. We know you're lying.
We all heard everything because both major messages were broadcast live during the race. It wasn't even a, we're going to hide this on the YouTube channel or we're going to just keep it on the F1 TV. No, the world feed got both major messages so we could hear exactly the context we needed to see that you clearly...
Lossless audio, baby.
You clearly had changed your mind over the course of the race.
Yeah, and the subject that came up after the fact regarding Max's overtake is, what is a lasting advantage? Because clearly overtaking off the track, where drivers have been driving all race, gaining time, and that's the FIA's not enforcing track limits in that regard, that is a lasting advantage. But then, you could say the exact same thing about Lewis running wide every lap, gaining a tenth or two every lap, when the margin of victory was 0.7 seconds. Near is enough. So the lasting advantage argument, what is a lasting advantage? And again, either the track is, either it is part of the track and available to use, or it isn't.
I think the discussion now has to be how these rules seem like they're very vaguely worded.
Or at least very much open to a massive amount of interpretation. That's the problem.
Yeah, they're not open to interpretation. If you look in the rule book, they're pretty set in stone. It's that they're not enforcing them clearly.
Yeah. And it's a shame. It's a damn shame because the discourse directly after the race wasn't, that was a brilliant Grand Prix with the two best racing drivers on the planet right now.
Yeah, they're the two presumptive protagonists of the sport now.
Yeah. They beat the shit out of each other for 56 laps. It was exactly what we were all hoping this opening race was going to be. For once, F1 fans' dreams and prayers were actually answered for once. We got the most ideal race we could have possibly asked for. The optimistic race we all wanted to kick off the season. And the discourse on Twitter and the internet afterwards was the fucking track limits. You know how frustrating that is?
Well, I think mainly the social media discourse was like that because of the result. If the positions were swapped the other way around and Hamilton got denied the win because of track limits, it wouldn't be this bad.
I'm not so sure. I think it would just be
100% certain about that. I'm 100% certain about that.
I'm with King. Because if you're in neutral, you want to see...
I think you just switch the fan bases screaming from the rooftops.
to a degree, but I also think if you're a neutral, you want Hamilton to lose right now because he's won five of the last six championships, six of the last seven championships. Like, if you're a neutral, you kind of want to see Hamilton taken down a peg. We know how dominance in sport works.
Yeah,
you know, we get sick of one dude winning all the time.
The biggest storyline heading into this race, which even you brought up yourself, hey, Mercedes, like, Mercedes don't have as big as advantage they had before. And then,
if any,
we come through this very dramatic race. Guess what? Mercedes still win.
Yeah, and that's just it. Like, Red Bull might have the faster car right now.
It's aggravating because the inconsistencies of how... This is the shadow in this that this race exists in now. And it's not fair to the drivers involved.
No.
It's not fair to the teams involved. Toto Wolff openly said the vague track limits interpretations won them the race.
Yeah.
And it's not fair to us spectators who are watching going like, wait, so you're allowed to run out there alone, even though you're not, but you're not allowed to overtake out there, so what the fuck just happened?
Right. You know how rare it is that Mercedes and Red Bull are on the same page and agreed about something, even though one deliberately profited off that ruling on the track and the other one didn't, and they still came together and said the same thing?
Because it's been clear for at least a year and a half now that all the teams are not happy with Michael Massey.
He has rubbed a lot of people the wrong way since taking over as race director. And like I said, we have receipts of multiple incidents where people have been unhappy at the way he's handled the situation. And this one was probably no different, unfortunately. And it did have a dramatic outcome on the race. Not, you know, and of course, everybody was pissed off. Everybody was annoyed by it. I'll be honest, Red Bull took it with remarkably good grace, given their standards.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't really kick up a stink. Horner wasn't as petty as he normally was about this sort of thing. He was like, shit happens, but we would like clearer interpretation on what the track limits are. And again, as mentioned, Toto completely agreed. He was like, well, look, you're right. We don't want to win off the back of vague terms, basically. And he admitted it was pretty much the reason why they won the race, which is a shame, because this was a magnificent win for Hamilton. Yeah. Win number 96 of his career.
It taints one of his best drives. It taints one of the best Grand Prix in terms of a fight for the lead.
I think people who go on saying that this is tainted and this is a tainted race because of the track limits are the most boring people.
Yeah, because this, like,
this was like a 9.5 out of 10 Grand Prix.
Like, guaranteed, by the time we see the checkered flag at Imola, we're probably going to forget about this track limits thing. I think
the only way I could see that happening is if, like, Verstappen loses the title by, like, 7 points. But there are going to be many opportunities where Max Verstappen could end up losing the title anyway.
I think, like, there is a bit of a disconnect about what the teams are unhappy with and what social media in general are unhappy with. Like, obviously, the teams are unhappy with Massey in general, and for a variety of different reasons. With most people on social media, it's very specific issues, usually dealing with the outcome of either the race, a podium, or points.
People often tie the incidents to the drivers they support or do not support.
Yeah.
Whereas the way teams feel with Massey is just draw some line in the sand and say, okay, here's the line, don't cross it. Not moving the line seemingly almost lap to lap with certain incidents.
Yeah, where like Dre said earlier, even Mercedes were unhappy with Massey during the race. And if you go on social media, I don't know any Hamilton supporters that would openly say, yeah, we're definitely unhappy about this call, guys.
No, it was a shit call! Woo!
But even then, further back in the pack, I mean, you had Yuki Tsunoda, who we'll get to a little bit later. Fantastic rookie debut for him. Fighting with Esteban Ocon. Tsunoda forced him off the track at turn 4. Ocon stayed out there, got the track position, and was able to complete the overtake.
But then again, you can make the debate that he was... Yeah.
He was forced out.
But he was forced out there. But then that's okay to do because of Massey's ruling with the Verstappen incident in Austria 2019. So it's just a mess. And it's confusing for us. It's confusing for those involved. And we just want more clarity in how he's enforcing the written rules.
Yeah.
The enforcement and the interpretation is going to have everybody scratching their fingers at some point. As mentioned, you know, mitigation is a big part of being a steward. So, you know, I don't always try and be too harsh on them because it's not easy, and there is a wide range of penalties, for example, that you can give. For instance, we'll get to with Formula 2 later, because that was a sketchy one in its own right. Yeah.
It does make me miss the boats, because
it's always go back to the
yes, because like for 2 months we watched boat racing and the penalties were always very clear cut, and even if things were a little vague, they always had the race director come onto the broadcast and explain what the ruling was and why that decision was made. Mm. And
no, King, I'm sure that the Suez Canal is missing a boat right about now.
And
y'all ever just have to do a drive of shame? Down a road where you have to drive by every person you just held up in traffic for an hour.
And, like, to make a somewhat apples and oranges comparison to the America's Cup has her own track limits penalties. And even when you're forced out of the track boundaries due to a technical fault, you're still penalized because the boundary's the bad boundary no matter what.
Yeah. It's a shame. It's a shame. It was messy, and at least in the short term, it was a bit of a blinker on an otherwise fantastic Grand Prix. And
I still think it was great. Solid 8.5 to a 9 out of 10.
I give it a 9.5. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was
fun tactical battle.
Can't ask for much more. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it wasn't just the fight at the front, it was the fights throughout the field.
Yeah, I wanted to make a mention of some of that. I mean, running down the field a little bit here, we normally don't do that so much on this show anymore, but we used to, certainly. I mean, looking at it, Lando Norris, again, like, it's getting to a point where Lando finishing fourth is no longer a surprise, and that is a positive endorsement of McLaren. They are definitely the third best car in the field right now.
It's almost like everybody's been sleeping on Lando Norris for the better part of the last 2 years.
Everybody? I'm not so sure about that.
Depends how much you on Twitch these days.
Oh. I mean that in the sense that he is almost never mentioned nowadays in the same level as Verstappen, Leclerc, and even Russell when he is clearly on that level.
Oh, absolutely.
I think the people aren't considering him there are wrong. He had the measure of Daniel Ricciardo in that car.
Mm.
And Daniel Ricciardo is no slouch.
Ricardo's fair play to Daniel, though,
because his car was busted for most of the race, although that was kind of... He did kind of...
That was not his fault.
Gasly hit him.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a messy first lap. We had a messy opening couple of incidents, and Gasly, who put that car fifth, AlphaTauri also being real, they were very good in qualifying. Well, Gasly threw it all away by driving into the back of Ricardo very clumsily, knocking his front wing off, destroyed his floor, and he was never a factor again.
Gasly had top five pace all weekend long. Like, he was bringing AlphaTauri back to the days of like the late 2000s when they were giving their sibling team a run for their money. Some guy called Seb. I wonder what happened to him. Point is that Gasly was really quick all weekend and just chucked it all the way on the opening. That was such a shame for what I'd argue, outside of Monza, was probably Gasly's best weekend in F1, top to bottom. Was just mad impressive the whole way through. Just a shame he didn't have the result to show for it. Charles Leclerc, quiet, but a damn solid P6 as far as I'm concerned.
Dare I say that there is signs of life coming out of Scuderia Ferrari Mission Winnow? I'm not going to tell you that they're back to being title contenders, but they looked... They didn't
you can't,
look
no,
because
you can't say there's
year.
Signs of life when you look at their budget and where they should be and where they are. Yeah. Especially when AlphaTauri on the weekend looked stronger than them. The Ferrari definitely, it looks better than last year, but that's only because it couldn't look much definitely. Worse now, could it?
And to no. be fair, and, they might have a second driver in there that's worth a damn now, because Sainz was up there, and he was in the wars, to be fair. He had a good couple of fights in there with Fernando Alonso, his fellow Spaniard, and Sebastian Vettel, which we'll get to very shortly. But it looks like Ferrari's got two rear gunners. I mean, let's pump the brakes on Ferrari a little bit, because Leclerc was still a minute off the win, but, you know.
Yeah, that's like, the thing. Leclerc put in a great time in qualifying, but similar to last year, it looks like this Ferrari is much better on one lap pace, and we know Leclerc is ridiculous over one lap.
Oh, yeah.
Race pace, they were, well, a whole bottle of mid.
Yeah. As mentioned, Ricciardo limped a solid McLaren in seventh. Yuki Tsunoda ninth on debut. That's about as much as you can hope for out of a rookie in his first ever seat in the car. Japanese enthusiast RJ is down in his entire bottle of water in celebration.
Yuki was great. Not a great start, but everything after the start, he looked like he's been here for years.
I'm not just drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm downing it. With full force.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody loves this dude. Yuki Tsunoda is the one man. Well, there's another man who could yank most of F1 trim, you know. But Yuki Tsunoda is the one man who could positively unite F1 Twitter on this weekend.
I know.
Because his driving style is fun. He looked competitive. He let out a little swear on the radio in practice.
No, always fun. It was a big
no.
F-bomb. It was
no,
the
no,
biggest of
Yuki,
F-bombs.
Yuki, in his own words, is quite colorful on the radio.
The blast radius on that F-bomb was bigger than Yuki himself.
That's not hard, to be fair.
A small man filled with rage.
And Yuki had a couple great moves in the race. Good speed. Kept his nose clean for the most part. When he made his moves, he was decisive. And can't ask for much more on a rookie debut. We did miss someone in this top five. Someone who we thought was out of this race before it had even started. Control-Alt-Delete-Master, Sergio Perez.
Car died on the formation lap on the final corner. His battery just completely cut out and failed. They had to restart it manually from the dashboard. They were able to get it going again, but of course Perez had dropped to the back of the grid because he'd missed the formation lap. They had to abort the start. It's kind of funny, though. Verstappen was maybe one lap away from winning that Grand Prix, and we lost the lap due to Sergio Perez's aborted start. It became a 56-lap race, not a 57-lap race. Just throwing that one out
know,
there.
But, I don't know, but yeah, Perez, who had actually missed Q3 in that mighty Red Bull, is still really learning the ropes with that car, but in the race, he looked great.
Yeah, excellent race.
He looked really good, and I think it's not that we want to pile on Sergio Perez for not being Albon or Gasly. It's that, yeah, no, there are times, especially in the transition from Q2 to Q3, that like we're thinking, yeah, this second Red Bull car is cursed. And I'm glad Sergio Perez salvaged a fifth place finish. Yo,
yeah,
my dude is making moves. Yeah, I know he's in a top two car, but that's still an impressive drive considering the car almost didn't get to start the race to begin with.
Yeah, it was.
Which again plays into that curse.
Look, Red Bull bet on themselves. They tried running the medium tire in Q2. That's always a risky game in that second half of the midfield where anywhere between 7 and 13 can get a bit flaky, depending if someone puts in a killer lap. And if someone let's not forget, a Ferrari led that session because they had to slap softs on at the end because they were desperate to get to Q3. They wanted the higher grid position where the big teams will want to start on the better race tyre. So Perez was just a little... He was caught short more than anything else.
Perez, by his own admission, said it wasn't a great lap and that he's still learning to qualify the car. But again, race pace was good. Yep. And if you have stock in Alexander Albon...
Sell!
You're looking like Black Monday 1929 right now.
I hate it for him, and I hate it for Horsey. But I especially hate it for Horsey.
But what if I have stock in Aston Martin?
It is a bad day to be a former Formula One world champion. Sebastian Vettel, bad day at the office. Kimi Raikkonen, there but not really. Fernando Alonso, killed by a sandwich bag. Or is it a hot dog bag? Nobody knows.
Yeah,
not a good day for the olds of the grid.
No, Aston Martin stinks. They were not good. Vettel got a penalty in qualifying after being eliminated in Q1 because he was caught in some yellow flags, but didn't slow down enough for other yellow flags, so he got a penalty, started last with 3 points on his license.
Just conning no double wave this yellows, man.
No, I wasn't even dwelling on that when I did this. It's very aggravating now to watch Sebastian Vettel be involved for almost half the race in a fantastic scrap. He's making all the right moves. His wheel-to-wheel racecraft is as good as it ever was. And then he has a clumsy incident where he just drives into the back of Esteban Ocon.
It's like, oh, not again. Yeah, that was, it was a redundant 10-second time penalty for locking up and driving into the back of Esteban Ocon. Sorry to clarify from Jason, thanks for letting us know in the Discord. It was 2 penalty points for ignoring double wave the yellows in Q1, and then 3 for the incident with Esteban Ocon towards the last stage of that race. So Vettel picked up 5 penalty points in the space of one weekend, which I think has to be a record. I can't remember someone else having a 5-point weekend, which is pretty rough.
Not at this level, and maybe not in a long damn time.
I was going to say Mahavir Raghunathan would like to argue with that, but good when point. You're being compared to him, there's problems.
No,
Vettel isn't comfortable with the car. I know Aston Martin has more or less been reduced to this being a transition year because their car is badly crippled by the new regulations.
Yeah,
but we can't see that out of Vettel. That's not okay for a 4-time world champion.
No. You know what was okay? Lance Stroll somehow salvaging a point out of that.
Good drive from Lance.
Yeah, but when you're thinking you might be the third best team in the sport and you salvage 1 point out of the opening weekend that you probably shouldn't have got anyways. Yikes.
Yeah, Fernando Alonso was looking good for points in an Alpine that we were dissing hard going through the course of the weekend.
That car stinks.
Yeah, and they were set for more points. I joke about Fernando a lot on this show. He was excellent, and it was a darn... He deserved points. He was very unlucky with that DNF there towards the end.
I told y'all it was going to happen, and all this...
Shut up, RJ! Not a word out of Alpine, you!
Yeah, Alpine, for all their gesturing about, well, we did this to the car, it might not look great, but it performs better. When I see it, I'll let them know.
Last year, when it was announced that Alonso was signed with the team. Alpine and Alonso both made it clear that this year was going to be a rebuild year.
Yeah,
How many rebuild years has Enstone had since getting bought by the factory?
Half of them.
Every year is a rebuild. I think
they've not retained the driver lineup since coming back.
Renault has slipped, I think, to a distant fourth best power unit again.
Yeah, looks like it.
They were getting drag raced by everything with 4 wheels in that race.
Mm-hmm. It's like every time like Fernando or Esteban made a move, they were immediately getting counterattacked by the opponent on the other power unit the moment they got DRS. Saw it with Leclerc,
even the Ferrari,
saw it with Vettel,
which was a joke last year.
Yeah, they're getting pegged by everybody there for power now in a straight line. It was pretty.
King, I guess our respective blueberry bets are safe.
Yeah. Well, just wait for Le Mans with that Alpine LMP1 car.
Oh boy.
That might be the only chance for the blue to see victory lane. Alfa Romeo existed.
Yeah. Williams existed.
Williams existed. Williams looked better than last year, but again, couldn't really look much worse. And Haas, oh my god!
Oh!
I got two minutes and 45 seconds left on this clock that I want to set for the rest of the field. Mick Schumacher wore a fantastic shirt, as did Sebastian Vettel during the pre-race moment reflection and
hashtag
We Races One. And he finished the race, which is much more than what I could say about his teammates. This is all that I want to say about Haas. It's terrible. Everything else other than Mick Schumacher is bad. It's awful. It stinks. I didn't think it was going to be this bad.
Yes.
The
Russian Automobile Federation driver at Haas was a joke this weekend.
Yeah, Nikita Mazepin, or as we now call him, Nikita Mazespin.
Oh.
He spun once in qualifying. He spun, I think, once in practice.
Yep.
Once in qualifying, that was his fault. In qualifying, that was not his fault. He had a brake-by-wire failure. And then on lap one, turn one, or actually exit of turn two, he got on the curb and just ate shit.
Yeah.
Enormous crash, out of the race. We all laughed quite hard, stopped before finding out that he was okay, and went right back to laughing.
To be fair, it was like turn three of a Haas on the opening lap of a Bahrain Grand Prix. I think you can forgive people for being a bit nervous before wanting to go into one on that one. It was like, oh shit, not again. Wait, he's okay. Open season.
Nikita Mazepin looked like a driver who was not ready for Formula One. And somehow that is still not even remotely the worst thing I can say about him. But I will refrain from saying that on this podcast. You know how we all feel. Mick Schumacher also spun on cold tires. This car stinks. Oof. The rest of his Grand Prix was anonymous because Haas really are that bad.
Yeah.
And that's all I want to say about Haas, because honestly, I think they look worse than 2019 Williams. At least that car was slow as shit, but it was stable. Haas don't look like they're going to get anywhere near a points-paying finish this year, even with Mick, who we know is a slow learner, seemingly picking up on how to drive an F1 car pretty quickly.
Yeah, Mick is not the slow learner. Oh, we only perceive Mick as a slow learner compared to the other guy.
Like a year two champion, because we've been so spoilt with year one promotions in the last half decade with Verstappen and Leclerc and Lando and George Russell. We've been so spoilt with one and done guys now that we forget that apparently 2 years means you're not worthy of the Schumacher name anymore, because the internet is fucking stupid. Haas stink. That's all that needs to be said about Haas. Everything about them besides Mick stinks.
If they didn't just get a whole-ass wad of questionable sponsorship money, I would be saying this is a team that looks like it's in its death throes.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways it is, in other ways it isn't.
Yeah, in many ways it is, but again, due to aforementioned sponsorship, they're going to soldier on with little to no actual consequences for being
They're gonna burn into the ground and then be rebuilt in Moscow.
Yeah. And then,
high-tech F1.
They're fucking awful, and I feel bad for a lot of the hard-working men and women in that team who deserve better, and I feel bad for Mick Schumacher.
We hate it for the boys in the shop. We hate it for the people in the shop who built a... I don't know if it was a pretty fast race car by their standards, but it's still a race car all the same.
They're trying.
That'll just about do it for this Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Good one.
To F2.
Go watch this race. Go watch this race. Hell, if you have an F1 TV sub and you can watch these races, go watch the Formula 2 races. They're good. This weekend marked the debut of Formula 2's new three-race format. Two sprint races on Saturday and the feature race now serving as Sunday morning's main event. Both sprint races saw rookies win on their first weekends on the F2 circuit. Red Bull Junior Team prospect Liam Lawson launched from the second row of the grid to lead in sprint race one ahead of Sauber Junior Théo Pourchaire. Pourchaire was able to hang with Lawson through the first half of the race, but with 10 laps to go, his car lost power in a certified hashtag mechachrome moment. That opened the door for fellow Red Bull Jr. Jahan Daruvala to make his way up from 5th on the grid into Lawson's shadow. Daruvala fought as hard and as fair as he could, but Lawson held on for his first victory by less than a second. And another F2 rookie, David Beckmann of Germany, scored a sensational third place from almost nowhere. Sprint Race 2, on the other hand, was a showcase of the Alpine Academy. Guan Yuzhou, rookie Oscar Piastri, both fighting it out for the victory, and even Christian Lundgaard was in the mix on track despite having a 10-second time penalty. As the trio lunged into the first couplets of corners on the final lap of the race, Piastri fought his way past his Alpine Academy stablemates to take the lead and the win in just his second race. Zhou was promoted to second with Lundgaard's penalty. Deruvola finished on the podium once more in third. Zhou may have been denied a sprint race win, but he would not be denied in the feature race his first feature victory, using the softer compound tires in the second stint to his advantage as he slipped past Piastri and Richard Vasseur to take the lead. Piastri pushed past the limit of his aggression and trying to battle our old friend Dan Ticktum for second. Ticktum carried on his race and salvaged a runner-up spot after two miserable sprints. Following a DNF in Sprint 2, Lawson made his way back onto the podium as five drivers received post-race time penalties for safety car infringements.
A quarter of the field, everybody. Yep. Way to go, guys.
Yeah, when we were talking about issues with race control and inconsistency, we weren't just talking about F1.
Well, the Junior Series have a different race director for their series, so thankfully
I'm throwing the whole FIA under the bus here. The whole thing.
All of it. Yeah, we had sketchy ones, because I distinctively remember Ticktum got a 5-second time penalty in the first sprint race for spinning out Vasseur. They hugged and made up on Instagram. Richard said, "You owe me a beer." Dan was like, "No, several beers, sorry, my bad," basically. Then in race two, we had Lundgaard, I think it was a 10-second time penalty for a very similar incident in the second sprint race. So he got 10 compared to Ticktum's 5, which didn't really add up, given that we're very... like, there was actually... We watched this race on Discord, and we said there was enough mitigation to maybe even call it a racing incident, just to say, well, look, he's taking a different line around the corner. Lundgaard was boxed in. You kind of might just let that one go as a lap one incident and just let that one go. I would have understood on that one, you know. And then we had the feature race where Schwartzman locked up and drove into the back of a free wide, and then he got a drive-through penalty. So it was all... We had a good chunk of the spectrum of stewarding decisions used for a strange case of penalty. So to clarify, we were all just a little bit irked at the situation, and this was before the Formula One race had even started. We were all just going, yeah, this has been a bit messy for Formula 2 this weekend, but I mean, overall, I think the vibe is it's a good time to be a rookie, because almost all of them were very impressive at some way, shape or form this weekend. Piastri, that boy can drive. My God.
Alpine, you got a problem, and for once it's a good problem, and it's not your car in 2021. You got decisions to make, pal, because you got three future F1 drivers in your academy, and I don't know if you can make room for all three.
No,
I'm thinking,
you've got a similar problem there, pal.
Yeah, considering Enstone's tendency to change driver lineups, I just think they're going to cycle one of these three into their team every year and then kick them out again.
Or just not hire any of them and just take Pierre Gasly instead if he hits the open market.
And then toss him after a year.
Sure, why not? It's a seat by committee. They'll you all share it. How about that? We all get experience one way or another, because boy, Zhou Lundgaard, who was title favourite, picked by two of us on this very show last week, and Oscar Piastri were all excellent in their own right at some point over the course of this weekend. Also, I have to give a special shout out to Sprint Race 2, the TV director leaving us in suspense on that final lap with the side-on shot into turn one and not knowing who was going there in front. I don't know if that was the worst or the best camera shot I've ever seen for a final lap decider. I'm still not sure. I hated it, but I loved it at the same time. I was like, who's there? Where is it? Who are they? And then it's like, it was amazing and yet terrible. But, I mean, this was a fantastic weekend of racing. Oh, and
great
and
weekend of racing. It may have been a mess, but it's a mess that we love and appreciate.
This track just generates great racing.
Oh, yeah. For me, it's the number one track in the series, as far as I'm concerned. Like, for Formula One and its support series, I don't think there's a track on the calendar that consistently produces as good racing as Bahrain does. For the last few years, you've had some great races across the board in Bahrain. It just has a knack for it. I don't know what it is about it, but it just happens. And like I said, rookie's mad impressive. Like I said, Lingard, I know, is a second-year guy, but Piastri was great. Lawson was superb. You know, probably should be leading the championship coming out of this first weekend. I think he was probably the most impressive guy out there. Sadly, that sprint to race DNF, like a chrome, cost him dearly on that one. Again, not a great showing for Mechachrome again this weekend. Multiple nasty DNFs from key positions over the course of the weekend.
How do you pick a spec engine manufacturer that cannot provide an engine that is cheap or reliable?
We had another fire extinguisher go off as well.
the one in a million incident that is now like the third time that's happened in the last couple of years.
It was Gianluca
Petikoff had the whole Mick Schumacher special.
Oh, the exploding fire extinguisher. I just like, come on, what is up with these cars? I hate it. But again, we're keeping it relatively brief here, but great races. RJ gone.
Yeah. Yeah, two more rookie shout-outs. Richard for sure, great. David Beckman, great to see him back on a podium. Also, can Yuri Vips get some of that Red Bull Junior team love? Which, by the way, if you loved close wheel-to-wheel competitive racing, then you're in luck for the next round of the Formula 2 Championship, which is at... Oh, it's at Monaco.
Oh, and it's like 2 months away. It's May 20th time we see Formula 2.
We're all shitting on it right now, but Formula 2 at Monaco is at nothing else. It's weird.
It is very weird. It is sheer chaos. The next two F2 rounds are gonna be chaos. Monaco, then Baku. Prepare yourself.
You know, I think it's good, because in the meantime, we have this little break from F2. They can put in a much more reliable and cheap engine. I think we should LS swap the F2 grid.
It's not going to happen.
We haven't got enough credits on Forza Horizon 4 to make that happen. also, yeah, to sum it up better than I ever could, Zale in the supporters of our general on Discord quote, in the words of Oscar Piastri, if you don't like that, then you don't like Formula 2. There was some tremendous racing. What we would say on here would not do it justice. Go out of your way to see all three of those races. Highlights are on YouTube. If you've got F1 TV Pro outside of the UK, etc., etc.
Yeah. All the racing this weekend in Bahrain. Please, go out of your way to watch it.
Well,
it's worth the wait.
You don't need F1 TV Pro to watch the replays.
It's not the same, King, and you know it's not the same. again, go see the replays. Well worth it. Excellent racing. As mentioned before we get out of here as well, check back next week if you want to hear both MotoGP race reviews going down from Qatar. Some quick extra notes to mention. One, it wasn't the bike in red that won. I know, you're shocked. And we have to mention it, because we nerded out over this on Twitter and on Discord massively. Johann Zarco broke the all-time MotoGP speed record twice in the course of one weekend. 220.5 miles an hour on the Friday, and then on Saturday qualifying into a tailwind, he ran 225.2 miles an hour.
For those rest guys, of you out there, that is 362.4 kilometers per hour.
That's over 100 meters per second. That's to put it into perspective, imagine Usain Bolt's world record in the 100 meters, but 9.5 times faster. Like, an Olympic.
It was fast, it was speedy, and quite possibly it was quick.
When people are out here saying, hey, maybe MotoGP's too fast now.
Yeah! You got guys like Matt Oxley and David Emmett, guys that are veterans of this game for 20 plus years, turning around and saying,
in that article, they quoted Valentino Rossi!
Yeah! Valentino, I was going to make that point. Valentino himself was like, okay, anything over 205 is very dangerous. So it's like,
well, I mean, to be fair, that's all the Yamaha will do these days.
He was talking about it, obviously, from a standpoint. He was talking about kilometers. He was saying we thought 330 was extremely dangerous. The fact that we're now doing 360 is just remarkable.
Well, we'll save that for next week's show.
We'll save a bit more of that for next week. But if you haven't read Matt Oxley's piece about it on Motorsport Magazine, check it out. Great read. Talking about the upticks in power as well as the challenges of just going that fast in general, because 225 miles an hour on a 300 horsepower, 160 kilo prototype is mad. And one more sentence to sum it up: it is the fastest sanctioned speed ever recorded on a MotoGP bike, even if you include unofficial tests. Nothing has ever touched this. Ridiculous. And on that note, let's get out of here. But incredible racing. If you haven't seen it this weekend already, Formula One absolutely stole the show. Go out of your way to see it all already. Places you can find us in the meantime are on youtube.com/motorsport101 or on facebook.com/motorsport101. Again, subscribe if you're on YouTube already. Twitters are on the screens right now, in the description down below if you're watching on YouTube, or if you're listening to Whistle Eye Audio, it's at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric King, at CBuckley917, and the show itself at Motorsport_101. We're on Instagram at Motorsport101Pod, as mentioned. There'll probably be a couple of fun clips from this episode, because King sprung a surprise on us on that one, so that'll be fun. Check it out on there. Obviously, updates as well on all our new content when that all comes out as well. And of course, if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our audio episodes. You can upgrade to $10 for the video versions of those shows, as well as the supporters club of our Discord server, where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. Shout out to Zale, to Finley, to James, to Jason, to Vic, and to Zoe. Congrats, Vic, on the India Series win, you jammy bastards. I had to get a cricket joke in there somewhere. All the details and much more on our website, motorsport101.com. Oh, by the way, any video that I make with a script in it this year will also be on the website as well. So if you prefer your content to be written-based, it'll all be up on there as well. We'll be back next week with both the MotoGP Grand Prix of Qatar and the Grand Prix of Doha, which is really weird to say, but it's two Grand Prix at the same track. But hey, it'll be fun. If it's anything like the first race, it'll still be a good time. So until then, I've been Andre Harrison, they've been RJ O'Connell, Ryan Eric King, and Cam Buckley. Until next week, we'll see you next time. Thanks for watching and listening, and sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
Maybe Alpine's fix for the F1 car is to stick a Ducati engine in. Maybe then it'll be fast in a straight line.
Maybe we can make Monaco more exciting by making it a dirt track.
Oh, God. Oh. Joey Logano won. It's all you need to know.
Surface management is hard.